Governor Jay Inslee here now. You've centered your campaign on the issue of climate change. It's become such a partisan issue. Even here in New Hampshire, policy decisions have been left to individual towns and cities. It's really been more of a grassroots effort here. How do you plan to work across party lines and inspire that real change on a national level?
Well, we would like to do that. I think the American people are way ahead of the Republican Party in this regard. Vast majorities of Americans want clean energy. They understand the job potential of clean energy. They understand that they have a great risk of injury that they're now seeing with their own eyes. Seeing Paradise, California burn to the ground. This is a town of 25,000 people. Seeing the floods in Houston. Seeing Miami, that where they now have had to build up the roads because of seawater and fish are running through Main Street, essentially. The Americans are now experiencing this firsthand, and so they are demanding of their government that we act. But unfortunately, the Republican Party is still under the control of Donald Trump. And as we've seen recently, they are unwilling to rise up against him, and it's most unfortunate. So at the moment, the vast majority of support for these policies are through the Democratic Party and elected officials. We would love the day when the spirit of Teddy Roosevelt comes back with some Republican office holders. It has not happened to date. So in the current context of this, we have to always keep our hands open to Republican ideas. And I've been successful in bipartisanship in my state. Huge transportation infrastructure bill, huge improvement in education. We've done that on a bipartisan basis in my state. But until the Republican Party stops calling this a Chinese hoax, we're going to need to move forward with Democratic leaders, including removing the filibuster, which is now used by Mitch McConnell as a weaponized instrument to prevent action against climate change.
But do you worry about future presidents in a filibuster, whether the president be Democrat or Republican? Don't you worry that could have long-term implications?
I believe in democracy. I believe in the power of one person, one vote. I believe that we should follow the Constitution, which does not have a filibuster in it. And it is now an antiquated, antebellum, archaic institution. And we just have to face reality. And there's a really simple reality. The earth is effectively on fire. I marched with thousands of kids the other day striking because they know their futures are very much endangered. We know that we have just a few years to really start defeating climate change. And we know that unless we remove the filibuster, nothing's going to happen in Washington, D.C. So I believe it's a good time for leadership from outside the Beltway. I think it's a good time for a governor from a state that has moved forward on clean energy and has ideas that we're moving forward on right now. We have a long ways to go, but we need leadership to call this country to a mission statement to defeat climate change. And I'm the only candidate who says what to me is clear: defeating climate change has to be the number one priority of the United States. If it is not job one, it won't get done. And we need to make it the first and foremost priority of the next president. And I am committing to do that. And I have the youth of the nation with me. I have entrepreneurs who are ready to put millions of people to work. I just met a fellow here right now that has a renewable energy company. We're seeing economic growth like crazy around the clean energy industry, and it's time to have a president who understands that.
But you do need to convince independent and undecided voters who, quite frankly, many of them voted for Donald Trump, don't you?
Yes, and I believe we are going to do that, and I'm confident about that because I served as chairman of the Democratic Governors Association when we flipped seven governors' races from red to blue this year. And we learned to do that by talking to the economic aspirations of Americans, including in the Midwest, where we won seats in Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, and Kansas, around a message of economic growth, responding to the economic anxieties of people. And one of the best ways to do that is to point out the job-creating opportunities in clean energy. I got an argument with Meghan McCain. I was on The View last week, and she was talking about how Democrats mean we're never going to have cars or trains anymore. And I pointed out I drive a shiny blue electric car made by General Motors by American workers in Michigan. So these are places we can talk to people about job creation so they can raise their aspirations. We can build a middle class. We can stop this trickle-down nonsense, which has given all the tax breaks almost to the top 1% and left working people to go fish. And so this is a message of job creation. clean energy is a perfect way to do it, and I'm up to that job.
Well, when you talk about clean energy initiatives and you talk about economic health and job policy, when you talk about big government programs, obviously you're talking about expenses. I mean, is that a big sell to people? Do you worry about tax initiatives and being labeled a tax and spend liberal when you talk about these programs?
No, I'm talking as an optimist and a can-do American. I believe fundamentally that's the spirit of America. We are a can-do people. We invent, we create, we build, and we're going to build the new high-tech and low-tech industries to put people to work, and I'm confident of that. I co-authored a book about this 11 years ago, and now what I saw then is coming to pass. Look, the most clean energy jobs are growing twice as fast as the average in the U.S. economy. Number one fastest growing job is solar installer. Number two, wind turbine technician. Jobs retrofitting our homes in the construction industry are massive. Jobs building transportation infrastructure are massive. And the vast bulk of the equity that will be necessary to decarbonize our economy is going to come from the private sector, not from the taxpayers. We're going to do things that incentivize and create a demand for these. We're doing it in my state, where we're going to hopefully pass a bill this session requiring utilities to provide Washingtonians 100% clean energy of electricity. We hope to pass a bill to have a clean fuel standard to require the transportation fuels provider to give us cleaner fuels, a bill to call forth net zero homes so we don't waste electricity. These are all job creators. And may I point out something that the climate deniers, the Donald Trump followers fail to realize? The course of inaction is the expensive action here. Allowing your town to burn down, like happened in Paradise, California, that costs a lot of money. Americans are paying hundreds, if not thousands of dollars already, depending where you are, because of extreme weather events, which are increasing in severity. Look, forest fires, the scientists are telling us, are going to double in the next several decades if we don't act. Flooding will increase. I was in Iowa a few weekends ago where farmers could not get in their fields because it was too muddy because of increased precipitation events. Americans understand a good investment, and one of which is keeping a roof on your home. And right now, our home is leaking really badly because of climate change. And we need to make some simple investments to prevent this incredible damage we're experiencing.
You've been called a climate change candidate since you declared. Some critics have said you're a one-issue candidate. How's your response to that?
Well, I think people who would say that truly don't understand how significant and comprehensive this challenge and opportunity is, and it is both a challenge and an opportunity, because climate change is an economic issue. Look, if the economy is your number one interest, climate change warriors like myself are for you, because we're going to both prevent damage to the economy, and we're going to grow jobs by the bucketful of building a clean energy future. This is probably the number one growth opportunity for the U.S. economy, because we know the world is going to need new products and services. And that's what we do in America. We create, we invent, we build, we build new technologies. Whenever there's been a transition, America has done well, and there's going to be a big transition. It's a health issue. If health is your number one concern, it's a concern by reducing the epidemic of asthma. Look, if you've ever heard a kid wheezing, you ought to be against climate change, because climate change is increasing, or the pollutions associated with fossil fuels are increasing asthma rates. If national security is what you care about, the Pentagon has identified climate change as one of the top threats to the national security of the United States, because at desertification, climate change causes mass migrations, which destabilizes communities and creates conflict, which we have to get involved with all too frequently. So this is an umbrella issue. It covers virtually every part of our lives. And so it's not a single issue. And if you do want to argue the point, the day after Pearl Harbor, when Franklin Roosevelt said, we're going to fight for freedom, who would have called him a single issue candidate? Look, that was an existential threat. Fascism was an existential threat to our well-being. Climate change is an existential threat. We have to unify to defeat it. We just need a spark of inspiration and leadership, and I intend to do that if I'm given this high honor.
Parts of New Hampshire are very rural, much like parts of Washington State. How have you worked to keep rural areas vibrant or keep people from fleeing? How do you keep people, or let me re-ask that. How do you keep residents in those rural areas, or how do you bring young families into those rural areas?
Well, developing rural economies is something close to my heart because I spent 20 years in one, a small town of 3,000 in an agricultural area in a red Republican district where I got elected. So this is something very important to me. And what we have, our experience in Washington is that because we've had the right policies, we are growing jobs in rural areas. The largest manufacturer of carbon fiber in the Western Hemisphere, I believe, is in a small town called Moses Lake, Washington, in central Washington, and that goes into electric cars. The largest solar farm is in a town of 350 in Lind, Washington, where I cut the ribbon the other day. We're doing bioreactors, biofuel refiners in Grays Harbor, Washington, which is an old timber town that has been depressed. So we are demonstrating job creation in small towns, in rural areas. We recognize it as a principal instrument of rural and small town economic development. Now, we're also doing other things. This year, we're going to pass a bill to extend broadband more universally because broadband access is extremely important to small companies that want to start in rural America. So we're developing multiple channels. My number one message is, look, if you want to see progress, come to Washington State. Look what we can do. We're a template for progress. We've got the best economy in the United States. We have the fastest job creation, the biggest wage growth, the number one GDP growth, because we built a middle-out economy that is extending job creation across our state, doing things like increasing the minimum wage, having the most robust paid family leave in the United States, adopting the first net neutrality, legalizing marijuana, which has started a whole new industry. These are things we need to do across the United States. I'm a governor who's had that success. I think it's time to get things done in Washington, D.C. Having a governor in Washington is going to be a good thing.
You want to obviously appeal to voters in red states who have probably, again, leaned towards Donald Trump. The Democratic Party's lost a lot of these rural voters over the years. What has the Democratic Party not been getting right?
Well, we're getting things right now. This is why my colleagues that I work closely elect as governors won governorships in Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, Kansas. We took away Republican governorships. I know how to do this by talking to the job creation prospects of these areas, by making sure we hew to giving people opportunities economically and in education. And this doesn't go without hewing to a cry for justice. Look, I was the first governor who stood up against Donald Trump's Muslim ban. I voted for gun safety consistently through my career. I have been consistently standing up for a woman's reproductive rights for decades. These types of yearning for justice in the Democratic Party can be, must be, married to a message of economic development. And I think I'm perfectly suited to do both those things and defeat Donald Trump. Let's make him a blip in history that he deserves, and I believe we can do that.
Can't just be about anger against Donald Trump, though, can it?
Heavens no, and that's why my optimistic viewpoint about this nation is such a good contrast to his. We actually don't have to talk about Donald Trump very much. Look at people, their disgust for his chaos and tweeting is already baked in. We don't have to mention that. When we flipped 7 seats to Democratic governors, our governors hardly mentioned his name. We talked about our positive vision. We talked about the ability to grow jobs and clean energy. We talked about improving roads. Gretchen Whitmer, her message, her fundamental message was fix the damn roads. That's a message that can work, and we got to do that.
There's a lot of bipartisan. Okay. I'm going to give you one more question, if I could. What are you hearing from Granite Staters when you're talking to them?
Well, I heard some really good comments today that they believe that defeating climate change should be the number one priority for the next president. They're wanting someone who has had experience with success, and as a governor, I've actually governed, and that has helped produce the best economy in the United States. And what I've heard that those two messages seem to have some resonance here. I shook hands with the first New Hampshire person was a fellow named Garrett at the Dunkin' Donuts, and I'm looking forward to a few hundred thousand more.
There's plenty of Dunkin' Donuts around, so yeah, you'll have the chance to. Governor Jay Inslee, thanks so
Thank
much
you.
For your
thanks
time.
Thanks a lot. Don't forget to vote.